funny, eh? Stupid, because the more nervous I am, the more I have a good chance that they will sting me. Huh? Heard Shoshana's department. Shoshana, is it true? The more nervous you are, then the more they sting you, or? Okay, so what I would like to talk about now, just so to give you that back home. You know, when you look at this prayer, how it is built up, it says a lot about life. Not so much about death, actually. It says quite... It's another one. Do we have another one? Well, just be careful. It says a lot about life, not that terribly much about death. Yeah, maybe leave the door open, then it might want to go out. So we need to have a few... Okay, now, if you practice the full of the Buddhist path, then that's fine. But also, as we said at the beginning, you know, the advantage of thinking about death is that you start with the practice. When you practice purely. You practice like persistently and not just whenever you feel like it. And you die without regret. So one uses what is called these five powers in order to be able to do what we want to do. So the first power is called intention. So there's five powers while you're living and five powers at the time of death. So they're very similar. First one is called intention. Like, when you wake up in the morning, you make a strong determination what you want to do. And try to have something that is realistic, you know. It's like, I want everybody to like and to love me today. That's very difficult. But if you, for example, if you motivate for that very simple thing, may I be of benefit to others today, in whatever way, even just not harming them, may I be of benefit in that way. That's how His Holiness always motivates. May I be of benefit today, may I be of benefit to others. And he actually says, if I succeed to make somebody smile, my day is succeeded. Can you imagine? How humble he is. And how demanding we are. We want to save the world, and then the world is still as it was in the morning, then we're disappointed. Okay, intention. What's the purpose of my life? It's a very deep question, you know. If you want to have a fulfilled life, you need to know how you want to lead it, because I'm sure everybody has a feeling of having a full life. Or do we have anybody who thinks they have an empty life? If we have, then we need volunteers, so please come and volunteer. If you're bored and you have nothing to do, then do something. Because this is an empty life, it's true. Like, I think it's Einstein who said, people who think that their life is empty, meaningless, not only they're unhappy, they're barely able to live properly. And I know somebody like this. A Jewish, very intelligent French person. No matter what I say, nothing goes in. You know, I mean, I see him every time I go to Paris. I spend a lot of time with him. He's constantly depressed. I'm no good. My life is meaningless. He's having a very good job in the hospital. He's the chef of the lab, the boss of the lab. If you see him, you think he's mentally retarded. He has tics, and, you know, he's like that. He's very shy, and it's just... So what do I do with him? I go and have lunch with him or dinner with him. I listen to what he says. I don't say anymore, but your life is beautiful, because it definitely doesn't go in. I spend time with him. And he's very happy, you know. He's very happy to spend time with me, that's what I mean. Even though I can't help him, you know. He's not even, I think, wanting for me to help him. I mean, he's asking always questions, but it's like... And he's very distrusting, and he doubts everything. And he's driving himself crazy. It's really, you know, again, it breaks my heart to see potential like this. And he spends his life alone, feeling miserable, and I'm no good, I want to go to the cemetery. Then I tried to make a joke out of it. I can't remember what it... Oh, yes, so he sent me an email. I want to go to the cemetery. I wrote back, what do you want to do there? You know, and then he says, oh, I want to die. I said, but you're afraid of death. Why do you want to die now? Stop, you know. And try to make a little bit, to lighten up the whole thing, what he says. Not to take him too seriously. That's always very good. If I try to make a kind joke out of it, not a sarcastic joke. And sometimes he can even laugh. So, yeah. So, that one. So, intention. What do I want to do with my life? So I can, at the time of death, I think, okay, I did my best. And actually, the Buddhist intention goes further. Where do I want to go in my next life? Yeah. Okay. So you know, if you want to have another human rebirth, you know that just wishing to go there is not enough. It's, you know, I wish to go to, I don't know, Herzliya. I need either a car or somebody who drives me or a ticket on the bus. Just the wish is not going to get, or I need to walk. So that's then the second power, becoming familiar with that, repeating it again and again and again and again and again and again. And so, of course, for a Mahayana Buddhist, practice the two bodhicittas again and again and again, wherever you go. What for? Why? Why do you want to practice to do the two bodhicittas? Maybe let me ask you the question the other way around. What is it for us, Mahayana practitioners, that prevents us from being the way we want to be, from being a Buddha? It's only two things. No? Also, huh? Josh, you should do this course. You're so good. Huh? It's so good. Self-grasping and self-cherishing. So the two bodhicittas are in order to destroy these two minds. It's these two minds who keep us in samsara. Believing in a self, that's ultimate bodhicitta. Meditating on emptiness, that destroys the grasping at the real self. Meditating on the kindness of others, developing bodhicitta, conventional bodhicitta. Developing compassion, that is getting rid of self-cherishing in order to cherish others. So that's why we constantly, everywhere we go, we want to develop these two kinds of bodhicitta, you know. So if you don't know what it is, we are having a course on that in Tel Aviv, in Ramat Aviv. Can't remember when. It's on the webpage. Huh? Yeah, you're my boss there. When is it, Bhatti? 19 and 20th of October. It's from 10 to 5, I think. So we go through how to develop, especially conventional bodhicitta. The methods how to develop bodhicitta. So it's the power of familiarization. You repeat these meditations again and again and again and again and again. And the moment will come, as I told you, a wasp stings you and, you know, spontaneously after thought, good thing it stung me. That's very small. Yeah, it's a very small result, of course. But it's great. I thought it was really fantastic. I was so happy. Before I would never have thought like that. Yeah. That's the power of familiarity. We have to become familiar with it. Otherwise, we won't practice it, you know. You have to repeat. First, the intention, you know what you want. Then, repeating it. The power of familiarization. Then, the power of the white seed, they call this. I know we could find, you know, more skillful words for this. It could be the power of a positive action. But it's called the power of the white seed. I'm giving you these words from the texts so that when you read the text, you recognize it, because that's what it's called. The power of the white seed, S-E-E-D. Yeah, I'm telling you, just a moment. I will tell you immediately. So that means creating positive actions, doing good deeds. What's it called? Mitzvah. Oh, the other one is chutzpah. Mitzvah and chutzpah. Doing mitzvah. And, but as Buddhist, you know, the Buddhist, it's hard work, I tell you. It's more difficult than Christianity. I don't know Judaism so well, but I have a feeling it's also more difficult than Judaism. It's not enough just doing mitzvah. You have to purify your negative karma. That's the power of the white seed. Doing mitzvah and purifying your negative karma. That's action. You do something. Yeah? Power of the white seed. So, purification can be learned. When you purify, you need what is called the four opponent powers also. There's not the five here, there's others. Four. Yeah, and if you look at psychology, they're totally psychological, right? You set yourself a certain standard of ethics. You see that you have fallen from it. You know what you want, okay? That's my standard of ethics. I have fallen from it. You recognize it. You regret it. You understand you have to do something about this. That's the third power. So you do something about this. Like you do an action, and at the end, a very strong determination not to repeat the action. The standard of morality comes from a source, which is Judaism, Buddhism, secular ethics, whatever. Yeah? So that's your reliance, that's what you rely on kind of thing, power of reliance. And you have to do this, it's not enough just to know it. So basically every evening you look over your day and you look, okay, what was it good what I did? And you rejoice. We forget this part, you know. We're only looking at the dirt, we're never looking at the pure things. So you rejoice, and then you see, oh, this one, not so good. And then, if you are a Mahayana Buddhist, very easy, you do Vajrasattva, you know. The whole practice is there in 2-3 pages. A sadhana, people sometimes ask me, what is a sadhana? A sadhana is something that tells you what to say, what to think, and what to visualize. So you don't need to invent anything. Yeah, that's what we will do during the Tara retreat. Tells you the steps, and it's called you approach Buddhahood with the sadhana. It's not that, you know, difficult to relate to. If you look at psychology, it's very easy to understand why this is done like this. So you have a sadhana, like a manual, a meditation manual, which tells you first to take refuge. You need to know what refuge is, because just the words, by the way, that's not going to help. Yeah. Then you need to know that you have fallen from your standard without guilt, without any big stories, just to know I've fallen from my standard. You do the action, which is, reciting the mantra, visualizing the light coming into you, purifying negative actions. All the negativities go through your lower doors. At the end, you make a strong determination to be more vigilant. Then people say, that's too easy. If I do negativities, I have to suffer for it. If you want, you can. But you don't have to. You see, that's what we think. When we do a negativity, we have to pay for it. That's our attitude that we have from Christianity and maybe from Judaism also. You have to pay. Yeah? Now, if the paying and suffering would make us better people, we would be wonderful people. If we would understand why we pay, if we say, yes, it's true, I have to pay this, but then it's finished, then it will work. But because we don't understand this system properly, we go into guilt. Yeah. So whereas with this, it's like you don't have to pay, but you have to do something. And it's very simple, you know, Vajrasattva, this, where is he? That one, above your crown, white light coming, then you say the mantra, the negativities go, finished, and you make strong determination not to be more vigilant. It's, of course, you make the strong determination not to do the action again, but you know from the beginning you will not succeed. But then you purify again and again and again and again and again, and you become more and more vigilant. Your life again becomes happier and happier and happier. If you do regular purification practice, depression has a very small chance. Very small. But you need to do it regularly, meaning every day. And of course you need to know what you're doing also. So it's good to sit down with somebody who explains properly what you think, and especially why you think like that and like this. And then the trust in the placebo. That's what we don't have. The trust in the method. That's very important. Even though the Vajrasattva is also empty. Even my negativities are empty. Even though there's no I was creating negativities, still it has a function to make me suffer. That's why I need something that seems to be real to purify it. You see, it's too early for us just to work with emptiness and say, in emptiness there's no I. But you always integrate it in these practices. Always the emptiness has to come in. Otherwise it gets too heavy, this whole thing, you know. Otherwise it becomes really theistic and Christianity. Yeah, okay, so that's the white seed.
Can I ask something?
Hmm?
About purification.
Hmm.
I also made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And why? And because of that, I believed, I think you're correct, that I'm just practicing it now for infants and so forth. To really purify, I need a real refuge. I need to really understand that the practice I'm doing, with the, whether it's frustration, so
What?
What
I think so. Otherwise, you know, if you you don't need to know what's in the medicine for the medicine to work when you swallow it. You just need to do it. Then, of course, you know, the more, because also this whole thing when you say real this and real that, again, comes very solid, and then we bring in all our emotions of guilt and inspiration, and then we go over the top again. Then it just feeds the ego. Yeah, be sober, realistic, do whatever is said in the sadhana. You don't have to feel emotional about, that's what many people think. And that doesn't just go for purification practices. You don't have to feel emotional. We want to get away from our emotions. You have to be sober and realistic. Just do it. Just do it. It's the doing it that is doing the trick. And then when you feel that it starts to work and all this, then you have faith, more faith. You know, the faith increases as you go along with it. You can't sit down and say, okay, now have faith. It's impossible, you know. You need to have the faith of being able just to do it regularly. That's the first faith. You have no idea what you're doing, but you're doing it. Because quite honestly, how can it do harm? You know, people are always afraid of doing these things. Why? What are you afraid of? Of course, that your school friends see you, what you're doing, and then think that you're stupid. This is, but you don't have to tell them. You don't have to tell anybody what you're doing, you know. We are not giving ourselves the permission to be happy because we have this thing. This is too easy. I need to suffer for my negativities that I've done. Why? You can if you want, you know. The best thing, if you think that, if that's your attitude, then do something that you find really difficult. Do that as action.
I'm not talking about suffering. I think that this is the right thing to do. I'm not looking for something that would cause me suffer or pain. I just want to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that the medicine works if my mind is in the right place, which will be.
Of course, yeah.
So
now it works a little, you know. I mean, Geshe Champa Tetok at one point, he said, you know, we have oceans and oceans and oceans of negative imprints. And then we take a cup. You know, we do 10 minutes of Vajrasattva. Like, imagine, how long do you do your purification practices in terms of time?
10 minutes.
Okay, 10 minutes. How many minutes does a day have?
Many.
Yeah. So, much more than 10 minutes, right? So, 10 minutes we purified, and all the, you know, like 23 hours and 50 minutes we are out there believing what we're seeing. Even if we don't do negative actions, we still have this kind of ignorance, believing there's a real I doing a real. It's always like, but what's our only chance to get out of it? To continue, we have no choice. And I don't use oceans. I use a bathtub. So if your bathtub is stuck with water, it doesn't go down like this. And you take a cup, right? So, and you want it empty because you need to be able to go into that tube there. So you take a cup, and then after 3 cups you say, oh, it doesn't work, I can't see any difference, and you give up. You'll never get that to the bottom. The only choice you have is, I mean, the only choice, the only way that it will finish at one point, you just continue. Yeah? That's it. And then the rejoicing at the end of the purification practice is so, so important to feel it's gone, you know. And then if you do Vajrasattva and you have the initiation, you rise as Vajrasattva. That's part of it. Yeah, it goes into tantric practice. So the Tara retreat will go in that direction. So then there will be lots of explanation why this is done, you know. And also purification, body, speech, mind, light, this, that, then emptiness. I mean, I think we cannot purify negative karma, really. Why not? Because it doesn't exist. Yeah, so as long as we still believe that it exists, we'll never be finished with this. But the purification now helps us to have a quiet mind who will develop shine, and will then have latong, and we can combine these two, and we'll see emptiness, and then we see, my gosh, all this time I struggled and struggled and struggled for nothing, but still we'll be happy. But without the struggle, we won't get there. Without the purification, we will not get there. So this is why I used the word placebo a little bit, like Chaya, it was a little bit tricky. It is tricky, you know. Like when the Buddha says, and it's so frightening when he says that, and we don't understand, he says, my teachings are like a raft. It is to cross the river. At the end, if you want to go to the other shore, you have to give up that raft. You have to give up my teachings. That's what he says. And that's the third step. Give up all views. Right? So, and then he continues to say, you know, if you have to give up my teachings, there is no question that you have to give up all your negativities also and your views. And that, you know, at the end, we do all this work. At the end, it's like having written a wonderful book, and at the end you go in your computer, delete. And then we're there. And that, because we only know existence and non-existence. We don't know this middle way of non-inherent existence. Yeah? So if we really want to go to the other shore, we have to throw everything out that we learned. Because none of it exists absolutely, truly, from its own side. But in order to be able to throw it out without falling into nihilism, we need to do this path. We need to do these steps. Can you see now why you need humor and patience on this path? Because otherwise you're not getting anywhere. Yeah? So, that's the power of the white seed. Create as many positive actions that you can, and mitzvah, it's okay. Yeah? You know, it's easier to die peacefully if you have a lot of mitzvah. People come and say, oh, thank you so much for having done this, this, this. Then when they come and say, oh, you know, you do this and this and this to me, but now I forgive you. That's not very skillful. Don't tell anybody at the time of death that you forgive them, because it makes them feel guilty. Tell them about their mitzvah that they did with you. Can you do mitzvah with other people, or you just do it with God? With other people also. Good deeds. Positive deeds. Okay, so if you do mitzvot, mitzvah alone is not enough. Because why? Because you have the power of intention, power of familiarity, then automatically becomes mitzvot. The first power, that's a bit difficult word, is called the power of repudiation. But you could always also say the power of rejection. You need to know what you reject. What do you reject? Your enemies, your mother-in-law, your boss. No, you reject self-cherishing. Self-grasping and self-cherishing. That's your enemies. When you start to understand the only enemies that I have is my self-grasping and my self-cherishing, that is what I want to reject. So here, of course, you know, in the text it says, beat it like you would be beating a stealing dog. Now, we would never beat a dog. So, of course, that doesn't work for us. The Tibetans would beat a stealing dog. So beat it like you would beat, we don't beat anything. Beat it like you would abuse a settler with words or something, you know. If you would, I don't know, just, you know, like really reject it the way you reject your worst enemy. Not with anger, but with wisdom, but with force, with strength. Not to follow the self-cherishing. I think they're looking for the word self-cherishing at the back there. What is the word for self-cherishing? Self-concern is also good. Self-centeredness. Self-centeredness. Self-concern. Self-concern is good, but like exaggerated self-concern. Obsessive self-concern. You know, like, why this person in Paris actually? Why he is so... He only sees himself. It's almost pathological. It's amazing. He cannot open. He only sees his own suffering. I met him in Tahiti. He was earning 7,000 euro a month. But he had very little work, only 2-3 hours a day. He said, I feel so depressed because I get all this money for all this little work. I feel so bad about this. And he wanted me to have compassion with him. And I had. Because if somebody has such views that he doesn't see the suffering of the poor people, he thinks his suffering is worse. Because he said, I'm not burned out, I'm bored out. So don't make fun of these people. Their suffering is so stuck because of that self-concern. Don't make fun. It's like he's really suffering. And it's very difficult for them to get out of it because it's I, me, me, me. He cannot see others. Even though sometimes he goes to volunteer and, you know, he goes to these restaurants du cœur, I say, where you give food to the poor and all this. Then he gets frightened of the world again and he sees the aggressiveness, the violence. He's absolutely non-violent, that is true. He's so stuck. He's so stuck. And he keeps watching these anti-Semitic videos on YouTube, you know, to frighten himself even more. Then he sends me the link and I said, look, Bruno, I'm not Jewish, it doesn't affect me. Stop it. You know, it's one-sided, but he can't help it. Shall I invite him to come here at one point? Okay. And then at the end is dedication or prayer. The power of dedication or the power of prayer. Sometimes called power of dedication, sometimes called the power of prayer. So if you practice these five forces in your daily life, I think you have nothing to fear at the time of death. If you apply it, yeah? The dedication is in the evening before you go to sleep, whatever positive energy I created today, I dedicate it to my own enlightenment so I can lead everybody else to enlightenment or whatever, you know? I can continue to be of benefit to others. This is what I said in the evening. Look what you've done. Rejoice about the good things. Immediately dedicate it so it becomes quite firm. It's a good way to spend the day like that. If you harmed somebody with your words or inattentiveness and all this, then don't go, oh, it wasn't my intention. If you feel that the person got harmed, they got hurt. Don't go, oh, they choose to be hurt. Okay? So purify that. Even if it was not your intention. The karma from that is very small. But let it go, purify. I'll be more attentive next time. And you use the four opponent powers. You wish that person all the best. You maybe mentally send them a present or something. You know, you can do many things to let go of that guilt that we have. Because guilt creates tension between people. And then we can't approach them properly anymore. And then it turns into something even worse than the act after a while. Something very stuck also, you know. So we need to be able to do something with this guilt, to dissolve it. Okay, so those are the five powers during living. Is that clear? Or do you have questions? It's clear, right? So then the five powers at the moment of death, they're similar but a little bit different. Same but different. Same but different. So the power of intention or determination can also be called determination, but intention, never to be separated from the two bodhicittas. Of course, this is for Mahayana Buddhists, so if you're not, then you have to kind of intend something different. But this is because it will then direct the mind in the bardo so that you find it again somehow, you know. Never to be separated from the two bodhicittas wherever you're reborn. May I always be of benefit to others, short term, long term. This is a beautiful thought at the moment of death, you know. Doesn't matter where I'm reborn. The main thing is that I'll be able to be of benefit to others. It opens up your heart. Yeah. It is, I'm going, I don't know where. Doesn't matter where, but may I be of benefit to others. It's compassion. It's a very courageous mind. So that's the intention. Then the familiarity we have to practice now. Yeah. So whenever there is big problems, then immediately, you know, do Tong Leng, think about bodhicitta, refuge, and emptiness or samsara or dukkha, like whatever. Use the teachings in your daily life in order to understand something. Be it emptiness, be it dukkha. You know, they're not the same level. So don't go together. You know, I want to understand the emptiness of dukkha, but I don't understand dukkha yet. It doesn't work. Yeah, so you need to know from which side you're looking. And this is the difficulty in Buddhism, that very often we don't know from which side we're looking in order to produce what kind of mind. And you also train to go to sleep on the right, lying on the right side. If you lie on your back, then of course not, but you train to go to sleep on your right side, because that has to do with the energy channels, or with our physical heart actually, because the physical heart is at the left side. So if you lie on the right side, it has less pressure. And then of course you do, but we're not maybe going into that, the Tong Leng, you know, where you close that nostril and you do Tong Leng with your left nostril like that.
You want to sleep on the right
side? Yeah, you're lying on the right side with the hand underneath your like this, and then you close the nostril here when you do Tong Leng as you go to sleep, like the Buddha was as he went, then he was lying like the lion posture, they call this. Yeah. So you train yourself to lie on the right side that it doesn't feel too uncomfortable at the time of death, so you're already used to that. That would be an aspect of the power of familiarity. And whatever you encounter as problems now, always transform it, always transform it, always transform it. Then the power of the white seed. When you feel that your life is ending, some people feel it, you know, as Michal said yesterday. Give away your possessions. Give them away before you die. And actually in Ladakh, I think it is, when somebody dies, all their possessions, like physical possessions, I don't know if they still do it, but before, it would be auctioned, you know. They would auction the cup, the underpants, the shoes and all this, and the money would go to the monastery. So that the person with their, even though they're gone, but it's still their belongings, created merit. It's nice. Instead of having all this fighting over the possessions. That people very often don't even need. That's terrible. Better you die poor, I tell you. And everybody's wish is to leave your children a lot of things. Not necessarily beneficial. Not necessarily. They're grown up. They can look after themselves. Okay, that's the power of the white seed. Because there's not much else you can do at the time of death. You can't go out and, you know. Give you, you have to give them before. When you feel that, it's going towards the end of the life, or say, tell somebody, please go and make offerings, for example. You give somebody some money, and you ask them to go make offerings to the beggars, or to, you know, to an organization, or something like that. And then, of course, the power of the white seed is if you have specific practices. You know, you do purification also. Or you do self-initiation, if you know how to do that. You do your sadhanas, and if you cannot do them anymore, you have somebody else next to your bed reading them for you. But you need to know them while you're still alive. Otherwise, you know, doesn't mean anything. And even if the person, if they don't know what they're doing, if they're reading it, that's good enough, because you know it. It hits something in your mind that will be helpful. And then, of course, the prayer or the dedication, may all sufferings fall upon me, may all my happiness only be there for others. Okay. Yeah. Which one? So what do you have?
Rejection.
Oh, rejection. Yeah, then the rejection is the same thing. To not to cling to yourself, try to meditate on emptiness. You know, knowing that it's this clinging to this I who is kind of making you die and who is then creating the rebirth. That one is the same as in the other one. Okay? There's another thing that might be helpful. It's a sutra which describes 11 helpful mind states at the time of death. Now, it doesn't mean you have to develop all 11. Develop the one that you feel familiar with and that you can create. So the first one is non-attachment. So what's the antidote to attachment? Sorry? Huh? No. That's the antidote for everything. Good guess. You can't go wrong with that one. It's the answer to all the questions. What's the antidote, the direct antidote to attachment? Sarah? That's the result of applying the antidote. But what's the antidote? Yes. Thinking about impermanence. So already now, whatever you buy, whatever you enjoy, always think at one point it will be finished. All collections end up running out. Try to learn that verse. It's really beautiful. And use it from time to time. All collections end up running out. Every meeting ends in separation. The high end up falling. Every living ends in death. That is the antidote to attachment. Yeah, it's in the verses is a little bit different. Mine is from the Lamrim. But it has the same meaning. In the verses it's a bit more complicated. Right, so that's how you, and whenever you buy something, you think, I have to leave this behind. I will not be able to take it with me. So you can also quite naturally reduce the things that you don't need, and you think, oh, somebody will have to throw that away when I die. Or if you buy something, you buy it with, I buy it, maybe, hopefully somebody can use it, so it needs to be good quality, or somebody can sell it, or so you can still kind of, you know, buy expensive things and all this. That's okay, because you need to live. You know, don't throw everything out. Giving away all your things is not the antidote to attachment, because attachment is in the mind, it's not in the object. But the understanding of the object, that is the antidote to things. So non-attachment. So with non-attachment, for example, also how you can create non-attachment by thinking, I have this on loan, or I rented it. When I, you know, I have Tommy's book, you know, the Jewel Ornament of Liberation. I enjoy it very much. I take good care of it, but before I go, I will give it back. If it would be mine, and it would be lying on the table, and it disappears, big suffering when it's gone. If I know from the beginning it's not mine, I give it back to Tommy, I say thank you, and I appreciate the time that I had it. And if I don't read it and I have to give it back, I regret. if I don't use it. Now, praise is human rebirth, right? Okay. There's nothing that we use that is ours. We just think it's ours. But if you can have an approach of, I have this on loan, meaning I still take good care of it, but it's not mine, I can use it for a certain time, then I have to give it back. Then that's a very good, you know, it shows us that when we have this attitude, we're able to do this without any suffering. It shows us that we can use things that we, from the beginning we knew that's not mine, and we lose them or we have to give them back. That it shows us we can do this without it, without suffering. So we need sometimes these things to see our mind can actually do it. It's just a matter of attitude. Yeah? Okay? So non-attachment. The second one, love for the near and for the far, like for everybody. May my death not cause too much suffering. May they be able to continue with their lives peacefully, happily, joyfully, and like that. That is love at the time of death. This friend of mine that I said died, and you know, I told her they smoke joints all the time, and he still continues. She died with the words, peace and love for the whole world. It's nice. It's beautiful. So even joints can be helpful. But if you don't need it, better not. Okay? Both of them, they're very beautiful people, even if they smoke joints, you know. It's just they have become a bit, they're not really in touch with themselves anymore. Like the husband. He suffers so much. He cannot enjoy anything anymore. So he still goes to all these places. It's a waste, but that's what he does. It's his life. And also he says, you know, when I'm really bad, I know I could call you, and I know you would have good things to say, but I don't want to hear them at that moment. I don't want to hear you rational things. I know you're right, but I don't want to hear them.
How long did she...
In June it was a year. And he's still in the same state. Right, okay. Then, so, just... And this is also something we have to train now. Whenever we encounter or experience something that we like, we go, wouldn't it be wonderful if all beings could enjoy this? Whenever we feel something that's not so good, we think, wouldn't it be wonderful if nobody had to go through that? That's it. That's generating love and compassion. And it can be totally fake at the beginning, and all of a sudden your mind pulls along with the words and your heart opens. It's quite amazing, actually. It's so simple. But you need to, the power of familiarity, you need to repeat. It becomes a habit. You know, instead of just enjoying for myself, we think, wouldn't it be wonderful if all beings would enjoy this beautiful, peaceful place? Second one, no feelings of revenge. Oh, the third one, sorry. No feelings of revenge. Because now you're dying, nobody can harm you anymore. Finished. On this basis. No need to feel bad. They should suffer for what they've done for me. It's a horrible mind. I've seen people die with such a mind. A woman in Delhi, she had three or four cancers. Started with the sarcoma, then the breast, then the lungs, then the brain. And she said, almost on her deathbed, you know, I want my son to come back, because he had left for America. Because she was so possessive. I want my son to come back to see in what state he has put me and to feel guilty for the rest of his life. Can you imagine dying with such a state? So, we have already now, whenever we have these feelings, they have to suffer for this. Then, why? It doesn't make you feel better if they suffer for it. For a short time, maybe, you know. But it's perverse happiness. I don't want this happiness. To see that somebody suffers who has harmed me. It's not good. It's perverse.
It's difficult enough to live with this.
Yeah. To live with that mind. Yeah, so try to do something about this. Wish them well. Even though at the beginning you don't, you know, you might, or your ego rebels, but continue to try to wish them well, to be, may they be happy, may they be well, may they be happy, may they be well. Maybe we'll do that may I be well meditation at the end. It's so soothing. You know, it's a bit soppy, I know. It's a little bit kind of, but it's really good, I find. Especially when you're not well. Really helps. Okay, so then, confessing. Confession. The mind that can confess without guilt at the moment of death. It is such a relief for dying people when you can go and say, look, because you feel it. You feel that they're very restless and something is bothering them. And I can say, because I'm a neutral person, right? So I say, look, is there anything you want to tell me, or maybe one of your family members, or if somebody else, I'll try to call them. If it's me, just say. And very often it's like negative things that they have done. And it's difficult for them to tell their family because they feel ashamed. Sometimes it's big. Very often it's quite small. Having lied about diplomas or things like that, you know. No, I'm not joking. I'm not joking. Terrible, you know, tormented by guilt. So, being able to confess, I've done this and this and this and this, and then I regret. I will try better next time. Yeah, but the person is dying, you know. A medical doctor?
No.
Well, if as long as not a medical doctor, it's okay. If it's a medical doctor, then it's dangerous. Yeah, because otherwise, it's like. Yeah. Anyway, so, like something like this. You know, I had somebody like this also. 1 point, who lied about her qualifications, not diplomas, qualifications. Or the university she went to, I can't remember. And you know what? Her friends did not forgive her. Even though she was dying, her friends did not forgive her. It comes, I think. I don't know. Okay, confessing. Confessing and being able to forgive yourself. That comes with that. That's what I mean. Confessing without guilt, that means you forgive yourself. Because that's the only way we can transform, when we can say, I've done this and this and this and this, without feeling ashamed and without being guilty about this, and say, I will try, honestly, I will try better next time. In my next life, I will try better. That's the fifth. Sorry, I took this a bit far. The fifth one is the determination to do better in your next life. At least to try. It's good. It's a good mind who says, I will try better next time. That's a mind of confidence. Then the sixth one would be the four opponent powers, to use those also. Now don't forget, again, you know, you don't have to use all 11 at the same time. Yeah, any one of them or a few together will be okay. So the four opponent powers is how you purify. The power of regret, the power of having a certain standard and taking refuge, power of refuge and bodhicitta, the power of doing an action, and the power of determination. Those are the four opponent powers for purification. Seventh, dedicating all the positive things you did in your life for the benefit of all others, meaning you dedicate for your own enlightenment. Dying without sorge und angst. Dying without fear and worries. Bhatti, you speak German? Yeah, you speak German. Angst, sorge. Sorge is worries. If you are able to die without worries and fear, no need to worry about your next rebirth. And they say, in order to be able to do this, take refuge. In what? You need to find out. It needs to be something that takes away your fear and takes away your worries. Something that can protect you. So this is what I said. For Christians, very easy. Christ, Jesus. They think of Jesus, they calm down. He will protect me, they're calm. It's another placebo, but it works. Works really well. But it, why does a you see, if Jesus would not be a placebo, it would work for everybody. It works for the people who have a good connection to him. Because we don't dare to ask protection from somebody that we have neglected our whole life, or that we have lived against their principles. Then we don't even try. But Christians can. This Jesus is really powerful, you know. Wow. I mean, to believe in Jesus. They say, if you give yourself up, it's great. If you give yourself up, you put yourself in the hands of Jesus, he will take care of you. What happens? You decrease your self-cherishing in such a drastic way that you're happy. It works. That method also works. But you need to trust Jesus. And you need to be bold enough to ask for forgiveness. You need to be courageous enough. Because unfortunately, very often we're not courageous enough to ask God or Christ or whoever to forgive us. The Buddha, you can't ask for forgiveness because he's never angry. You cannot hurt the Buddha. So you don't have to ask the Buddha for forgiveness. The Buddha only wants your best. And I'm pretty sure Jesus also, and God, if he exists, also. Okay, then the ninth, you have to think about impermanence. Every living ends in dying. Saying, yeah, it's normal. Goodbye, I'm going. My father went a bit like this. You know, he ordered a taxi, went to the hospital on Saturday. First, he gave everything away in his apartment that was of any value. He divided his money into two, like for me and for my brother. So my mom didn't get any because he thought she spent enough already. And so, yeah, he was very practical. And he kept enough money for the funeral in his bank account. He called the taxi Saturday morning. He went to the hospital. He was 85. Went to the hospital. Saturday he went. Sunday he didn't wake up. If I can die like this, I tell you, I'd be very happy. Poof. So conscious. Finished, I'm going. Bye. Cleaning up the house. I'm going to the hospital. I knew why he went to the hospital. It's much cheaper to take a taxi than to be the ambulance or the morgue. It costs much more. He was so. That's how my dad was. The purpose of his life was to earn money. So he wants to give it to the children. He's not going to give it to the ambulance or to the morgue. Taxi is 25 francs. Ambulance is 500. I go to the hospital myself. I'll die there. It's cheaper. It's more practical. And, you know, otherwise nobody finds me or something like that. I'm sure he thought like that. That's how he thought my time. He's so practical. I'm very grateful to him. You know? He was very considerate about other people that have to clean up after you when you die. Him also, not much to clean up. He had already given everything away. What? The ninth is thinking about impermanence. Saying, well, every living ends in dying. That's it. I lived a good life. So this is it. If you can think, I lived a good life. So please, you know, if somebody who is really a pain in the neck, and at the time of death, he thinks that he led a very good life, and he says, I had such a good life. Please don't say, but hey, look what you did. And you know, try to rejoice. Because that mind thinking that he had a good life is kind of waking up a good imprint, and so maybe next time he will be a more decent person. It's no good people going to hell. They don't learn anything down in the hells. It's no good. We should not wish that. From suffering, if you have no wisdom, you do not learn. You become worse. Yeah? Tenth, emptiness. Eleventh, only nirvana is peace. That's the fourth seal, right? So that you don't have attachment to samsaric pleasures. Because, I was talking to Geshe Pema Dorje about it, maybe Geshe Tashi, I can't remember. I said, how come We have people in Switzerland. They are terribly rich and they totally burn their good karma by just being careless and cheating others and all this. So they must have amassed a lot of positive energy to have this wonderful situation. How come they can't use it properly? And he said, so we try to figure it out yourself. The thing is with karma and all this, you can only assume, right? So we assumed if at the moment of death, somehow you have a positive imprint ripening, but your mind is craving for pleasure, that's where you will be reborn in Switzerland as a rich person, where you can fulfill that craving for pleasure. So be careful when you meditate that it's not for pleasure, pleasant feelings now, because that's what's creating that mind. The craving for easy, pleasant, nice. Or it could be also a poodle, so that's what I mean. So if you have an imprint of negative imprint ripening of an animal base, but at the same time you have some karma ripening of being, you know, giving you pleasure, that will be poodle. Poodles not so much anymore. Now it's these French bulldogs, the little ones that are very much in fashion. You know, the one with the big eyes. They're really cute. Yeah? The way they look at you, you know. I have a friend, she's a art therapist in a hospice, like with dying people. She takes it, her, it's Lulu. She takes Lulu along. She's able to, just by being present, to cheer up people, because she's so cute, the way she, you know, like this, and then the big eyes, and she always goes like that. Lulu. Right. So that's those 11 mind states. And something that I read, where did I read this? Maybe it's in this one, His Holiness's book, The Commentary on the Prayer. Avoid hating when you have to leave, already now. This for me was very powerful. Because I could see that sometimes I hate that I have to leave, because I'm leaving all the time. Not because I don't like the place, but because it's uncomfortable to again go to another place, you know, from Tel Aviv to Tuval, from Tuval to there, from this, that. Sometimes I don't like it. It's not hate, right? It's just an unpleasant feeling. So be mindful of that unpleasant feeling and dissolve it so that you won't have it at the time of death. Avoid hating that you have to leave. Yeah? So then you have a few things, what you can integrate in your daily life already. So it doesn't mean you have to develop these 11 states. You know, one or two of them is good. Check what is meaningful for you and what you could use or what you could develop. So now just briefly, we're going to look at the sutra at the time of death. That will be another help to remind us of our practice, if the Mahayana Buddha Dharma is your practice. Of course, if you're practicing Jew, then it will be something different. And that's okay. Or a practicing Christian. Yeah, it's fine. So, the wisdom at the time of death, Sutra, prostrations to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. At one time, this was heard by me. The Bhagavan was staying in the palace of the King of Gods in Akanishta, teaching Dharma to the whole retinue. After Akashagarbha made prostrations to the Bhagavan, he made this request. Bhagavan is Buddha, it's like he's a fully awakened being. How should a Bodhisattva view the mind at the time of death? Meaning, what shall we do with the mind at the time of death? Then the Bhagavan replied, Akashagarbha, at the time a Bodhisattva dies, he or she should meditate on the wisdom of the time of death. That wisdom is, since all phenomena are pure by nature, the thought of the non-existence of things is the best meditation. Since all phenomena are included in bodhicitta, the thought of great compassion is the best meditation. Since all phenomena are imperceptible and luminously clear, the thought which has no attachment to things at all is the best meditation. Because realizing the mind is wisdom, the thought that does not seek Buddhahood elsewhere is the best meditation. We always look elsewhere for Buddhahood. The Bhagavan spoke these verses. Since all phenomena are pure by nature, meditate the thought of the non-existence of things. with bodhicitta, meditate the thought of great compassion, like may all beings have happiness, and may all beings be free from suffering. Imperceptible by nature, luminous clarity, meditate without any attachment to things at all. Mind is the cause of the arising of wisdom. Do not seek Buddhahood elsewhere. Thus the Bhagavan spoke and answered the retinue, the bodhisattvas, Akashagarbha, and so forth, was very pleased and praised the Bhagavan's words. The wisdom of the time of death, Mayana Sutra, is complete. What do you think if you would hear that at the time of death? Not sure if it will work, but if you're familiar with these terms, it could definitely work to make you more calm and open. Oh yeah, bodhicitta, I'm supposed to think about others here. You know, oh, emptiness, yeah, it's like it's just an illusion. It's just like a reflection. Yeah. Do you think it could be helpful at the time of death? But only for those who are familiar with this. If you read that to your grandmother, you know. When that woman, you know, who died, who had like these visions of burning in a fire and all this, we sang Christian church songs for her, but also did mantras because she knew mantras. She came to the, because her daughter is a practitioner. She was very, so she's familiar with that. We also did that. We did both, Christian practices and Buddhist practices, like that. And she is so funny sometimes also. She would, you know, like from her slumber, she would wake up when she didn't have these visions. She would wake up, then she would call her. I'm still alive. You know. And she almost went 3 times, and 3 times she came back, incredibly strong. Like on her birthday, her 94th birthday, she was lying in bed and her daughter phones me, she says, can you come and then we do some practices because I really think she's going. That was the 3rd time then. The first 2 times I wasn't there. I was somewhere, Germany or somewhere. And so I come and she says, oh, I'm so tired. I am so exhausted. I really want to have a break. I can't go on like this anymore. I don't want to see anybody today. I don't want to have any visitors. And we said, yeah, we won't let anybody in. It's fine, you know, no problem. And so she went into a semi-sleep. And we did these practices, and then after about 2 hours, I said to the daughter, maybe it's good you go and have a rest also, because she stayed with her 24 hours a day for like 3 months in the same room to look after her. She's also a nurse, so she knows what to do, so it's very nice, you know. It was very beautiful to see how they appreciated each other's presence. Wow. Very nice. And so... So anyway, so I said, maybe I go and then you also go and have a rest because now she's sleeping. And then the daughter said, can you come back at 5 because my brother is coming with his sons? And then we can do a meditation. I said, well, you know, in situations like this when the people are not Buddhist, meditation is not always the best thing. It puts them ill at ease. They don't know what to do. Maybe they don't even like it. I said, why don't you wait and then see when they come how it feels? And then if you want me to come, I come. It was only 5 minutes by bike away. I come, and if not, 5 o'clock she phones me. She says, you can come. Mom is sitting at the table, drinking coffee, eating cake, and holding court. And she did. Amazing. She was entertaining everybody and laughing and telling stories from her life. And she said, you know, I just can't go. I'm still too curious what's going on around me. How can I die like with a mind like this? She's very realistic also. But then also when she had like these 3 upsurges, then she would really plunge for the next few days, totally. It's as if she, something in her gathers all her energy and says, but it's my 94th birthday. People will bring cake. And she ate that cake and she drank the coffee. But then at the end she had these terrible visions, you know. So, you know, if these visions come and you can maybe think everything is just luminous space, luminous clarity, even that fire, even that this, even that, if your mind is very familiar with it, maybe then that will help.
In the sutra, it mentions 4 minds, wisdom, bodhicitta, attachment and refuge. They are all included in this 11. does it mean that these four verses include all the others, if I read it properly?
Yeah, most probably, yes. You see, you know, it's very often is like that. You can, when you know the text, you know the teachings, that you can find it in essence somewhere. Yeah. That all phenomena are covered by ultimate and conventional bodhicitta. Definite ultimate, definitely ultimate. You know. All everything, it basically means everything is empty. But we should not see them as useless and meaningless because they're empty, so you need the conventional bodhicitta also. The compassion. And because people can't see ultimate bodhicitta, that's why people, us, because we can't see ultimate bodhicitta, then we suffer. That's why we have to generate conventional bodhicitta. Okay? So, you know, keep these things, these 11 states of mind, or this, and or the prayer, and use it, and or don't use it. If you can't use it, you know, I'm sorry that I wasted your time, but it's just 2 days, it's okay, I think. If you can use it, by all means, then use them. It's not that I'm, of course I'm happy when you use them, but you don't use them in order to make me happy. There's no point, okay? It's great tools, very simple tools, and use these five powers. It will really make a difference in your life, I think. You wake up in the morning, what's the purpose of my life? As a Buddhist practitioner, to work with my negative mind. So anything is good enough to work with that. To see my delusions, to see emptiness, to generate compassion, to, you know, to purify, whatever. Every situation, good situation, difficult situation, everything is good enough for that. But if the intention of our life is just to have everything easy and everybody is harmonious and loving and kind, then of course you can't use difficult situations. But if you settle for something that is possible, you see, that's realistic. At any moment you can work with your negative mind. At any moment you can enhance your positive mind. That's realistic. That's something you can do. And if you do it, then you will have a fulfilled life. And it will greatly influence your life and the life of the people around you. Now you might make quick progress, small progress, but at least you do something. If your aim is like to be famous or to be beautiful and to be liked and to be loved, maybe we'll get fulfilled. But look at these actors, you know, who are world famous and commit suicide. Even though the whole world loves them, you know, if they would say, oh, you know, I just want one of those, somebody would be so devoted to them, a fan, totally devoted to them. Doesn't work. If they're not able to love themselves, even the love of the whole world does not work. So we have to learn how to love ourselves properly. And of course, it's easier to love ourselves when we behave in a decent way. So don't make it too difficult for yourself to love yourself when you are not doing the right things. You know how wonderful to say at the end of death. My dad, before he died, he said, not just days, but like a year before he died, he said, well, you know, I did what I wanted. I had a really full life. I'm content. I'm happy. And it was genuine. It was true. He had no problems with dying. Especially he had water in his lungs and it was difficult. And he said, if I have to go to a nursing home, I shoot myself. I'm sure he would have done it. He didn't like to be dependent on others. Not so much out of arrogance, just because he didn't want to be a nuisance for other people. And then you have to, when people like talk like this, then you have to say, okay, I know you don't want to be a nuisance to me, because I offered. I said, look, if you need me, I come home. He said, no. No. I go to the hospital. They know what they're doing. So obviously he didn't trust my nursing skills so much. But also it was this thing about not wanting to be a nuisance. So now I would say, you know, okay, like at least let me try, because it makes me feel good. If I can take care of you, because thanks to you, you know, I earned that much money. Because he started the restaurant, I just continued afterwards. I would never have started the restaurant myself. I wouldn't have had the courage. Yeah, so it's thanks to him that I earned all this money, and also he liked me very much. We fought a lot. Ooh. You know, we had the same character but different views. Me socialist, he capitalist. Like, oh. Sometimes it was like... So it's good if you use both attitudes, okay? Like, try to earn your money like a capitalist and spend it like a socialist. Don't try to live, or don't try to work like a socialist and live like a capitalist. That does not work. Do it the other way around if you want to use both. Yeah, earn your money like a capitalist is very good, and use it like a socialist, also for others. Then you will have a happy life. Try to share it with others, whatever you have. So much joy, so much fun. Okay, so now it's 3:10, so you can have a break until 3:30. Yeah, and then we do this loving kindness meditation. Yeah, it's not according to the schedule, I think. But I think I have to finish by 4, isn't it? Is it or not? Am I totally off?
4 will be fine.
4 will be fine, yeah? Because the group is small and cleaning up, not much to do. Yeah. We're all going to die anyway, so why hurry home? You know, if you go out in the world, your senses are again exposed to things that bring up negative emotions. Why are we always in such a hurry to go back to these places where we're not protected? This is a good thing to ask yourself. Attachment is getting stirred up. Anger, if you know you come home, if you're a mom and there's a big mess at home. It's best when you come from the course, you already, if your kids are still at home, you already visualize a big mess everywhere. Because then when you come home and it's not so bad, you appreciate. If you think that everything will be totally paka, paka is a Hindi for totally okay, will be totally paka, you explode. Think like, oh, there will be huge mess, and then it's not so bad. And then you go, wow, look at you, thank you so much for not making such a mess. This is skillful thinking. Yeah. The practice, the Buddhist practice, is to learn to think skillfully, because it's our thoughts that create our emotions. They're not separate. Okay, so we meet again at 3:30. I can finish before. Make short meditation on loving kindness. That's also a very good mind to have at the time of death and during your life. And we're still in silence, I believe. Are we? Yeah, okay. Okay.